Lucy Hayward is a young mum, a playwright, and is also about to embark on a tour with her latest production. Now that sounds as if it would be enough to be getting on with. But on top of everything, Lucy is living with severe sight loss. In fact, living with a condition called macular dystrophy. Seems like a challenge. Lucy joins me now. Hello, Lucy.
Hi there.
It sounds like you've got a lot going on then.
Yeah, it's pretty busy, pretty chaotic. You might be able to hear somebody nattering in the background.
And who would that be?
That'd be Corin.
Corin, how old is he?
4.5 months.
Oh, yeah, that'll keep you busy as well.
Very busy. Well, for once I've got the phone away from him so he can't press the red button, which is lucky.
Tell us a bit about your sight condition then, because you had problems as a youngster, didn't you?
Yeah, well, I'd always been competent in school, but I'd always found that I experienced more difficulties than other people, and it grew and grew through my teenage years and got really bad when I hit about 17 and started, well, 16 and started sixth form college. I'd managed to get through my GCSEs, but my A-levels really proved difficult, and I had quite a serious breakdown the year after I completed college before going off to university. And at the end of my first year of university, I ended up being referred to a counsellor who, near the end of our sessions, referred me to a local eye hospital. And the following year, they diagnosed me with macular degeneration.
I think it's amazing, isn't it, that you could go through that amount of time and not realise it was your sight that was causing you the problem?
Well, I mean, that's what a lot of people say, but the thing is that I went for regular eye tests through my teenage years, but because the deterioration was so gradual, and because I had no link to anyone with sight loss in my life, you know, my mum had got glasses, you know, but they're correct, you know, her vision wasn't very good, but it was corrected with glasses, so that was kind of the closest I had. I really didn't know anything about sight loss. I didn't know anything. You know, I didn't know how to cope with that, what to do, what the support that was in place. So it was really quite an experience. And being diagnosed, I didn't get told of any support. So it was just a bit of a, oh, okay, I've been struggling for years. You told me I have this, but I don't really know how to work with this. Or what to do. It's just a whole new world when you first get diagnosed if you don't have anyone who understands that and can explain it to you.
Did your parents feel a little bit guilty that they hadn't picked up on it?
My parents didn't find out until a year or two later. I didn't tell anyone.
Why was that?
I think I was in, I'd been struggling for years. I'd moved quite a distance away from home to go to university. And I'm not very good at, I used to cry quite a lot, but I wasn't very good at actually telling people what was wrong. And I didn't really understand what was happening to me myself. So it was very difficult to explain it to anyone else when you struggle to understand it yourself.
Plus you want to maintain your independence as well, don't you?
Yeah, there's this fear that if you get diagnosed with this and then everybody finds out. I mean, it was quite funny. My mum became far more protective of me once she found out I'd been diagnosed with this condition than she was before. I mean, she's always been very, you know, she's always looked after me. She's always taken care of me. But I really noticed the parental strings tighten once I'd had the diagnosis and told her about it.
So you've had a breakdown and you've worked your way through that and you're dealing with this new to you sight loss. How did you get involved with writing plays?
Well, I got diagnosed in my second year of university. I managed to complete the rest of it without any support. And then I got a job as an actor in a show in North London. And while working on that, I really started to notice. I mean, I was having to grab onto the back of people when the lights went out on stage because I couldn't find my way off stage. And I thought, really, acting isn't the most sensible route for me at the moment. And one of the girls in the cast told me she completed a degree at Birmingham University, which was playwriting. And I thought, I've had experience with that. I'm quite good at it. So why don't I have a go at that? And I managed to put together an application, sent it in, and I was accepted on the course, which was really quite astounding because it was the top course of playwriting in the UK at the time. When I actually went on the course, there was only five of us in my class. So I was quite impressed with myself to get onto that course. It really lit a fire beneath me and really inspired me to move forwards and get on with my writing, which was really exciting.
And to put this in perspective, this has all happened, this particular part of your life, it's all been the last 10 years, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Did you find, I found, because I can't read for pleasure anymore, I found that my vocabulary and looking for the right words, sometimes I find that I'm not as good at that now. I would have thought that'd be quite a challenge if you're actually going to be working with words.
I found that I speak how I've always spoken. There may be extra words that come into my diction. There may not, and I may hear things that people say and think, oh, I'll use that later. But my work is focused around using normal dialogue. I like using day-to-day colloquialisms that people use in everyday life. You know, things that people talk about on a daily basis. I'm not looking to write things that have words that people don't normally use in day-to-day life. I want to make it very people-centric. I want to make my work appealing to a wider audience.
We'll talk about your latest work in a minute, Lucy, but I was interested from the point of view of somebody with very little sight now and going about your life. Writing a play, do you think you could write a play that didn't need audio description?
Well, yeah, that is exactly what I do. I realised that going to the theatre for me was not the same experience that I had had when I was younger and I could actually see everything on stage. I realised that even with the audio description, it can be useful for certain shows, but I found that sometimes there were technical issues with the audio description. Sometimes the music from the performance was so loud that I couldn't engage with the performance and I didn't really understand what was going on stage. So I thought, why not take that audio description and put that within the dialogue of the piece so that as the actors are talking, you can hear that audio description underneath. And the beauty of it is that a blind or visually impaired person can come to a performance and they can sit anywhere in the theatre and they can completely engage with the performance, but also it heightens the experience of a mainstream audience. It means that they get that extra access too and they're able to engage more with the performance, which is really exciting. It means that everybody has the same experience because I don't use as many visual signposts on stage. I've made it so that everything you need to know comes through the audio in the performance.
See, I love radio drama and I tend to think, and I've pondered this for years, what is the difference between a radio drama and a drama that you watch? The fact that a radio drama can convey all the information that you need and it's just done in that subtle way, the way you're talking about, and yet when we do other things, we have to describe things. So maybe it's the way we actually write television dramas, etc. Maybe there's a way that could be written that could incorporate more in the actual dialogue.
Well, definitely, because with theatre performances, a lot of playwrights are able to use their sight. So they use visual signposting on stage. They use all the kind of visual clues that they can to push a story on. And there's a lot of times during films and theatre that I will sit there and think, oh, and my partner will go, that's because this has happened on stage. That's because somebody's done this or because this has been. And it's then that I go, oh, okay, that's what it is. And so now I'm thinking of writing the audio description in from the start of the development process so that it's there throughout rather than at the end of theatre. Generally, at the end of a show, when they've done all the rehearsals, they'll bring in the audio describers, they'll watch the show, and then they'll put an audio description together, and it'll change depending on which city you go to, because there's different audio describes in different areas of the country. So the same show will have about 7 or 8 different audio descriptions. But with this, it's been put in from the start of the development process. So as I was starting to write this play, I was adding in the audio description so that it was an integral part of my work. I wanted to make it fully accessible for blind and visually impaired people. And it just means that it comes together better, and it means that you're able to just walk in and not feel that that's been tacked on at the end.
So your current play, what is the premise?
The premise is about 2 men who work in a train depot at night. And what I thought was really interesting was looking at the isolation that can be felt by these characters who work nights and don't have as much interaction with day-to-day society. I particularly found it interesting because one of the characters has been working in this role for the last 40 years, and you find out that it has kind of put a distance between him and his family because he's not as willing to engage with the day-to-day life. He's not kept up to date with modern technology because there's been so many changes over the last 50, 60 years in modern technology. And I thought it is really interesting to look at how people can not only be distanced from their family, but can really not be able to access the same services that if people are awake during the daytime, they can. And it's also the fact that they work so closely together, but they really, there's a distance between them. They don't have an understanding of each other's lives.
Like ships in the night?
Pretty much, yeah.
Now, you're going to be producing this and touring it, aren't you? This is the first time you've produced one of your own works.
Yeah, it's really exciting. I've worked with a few companies before. I've worked as a young writer with Pentabus, which is a Shropshire theatre company, known for producing theatre in the countryside. I've worked with Birmingham Rep as a young writer, and I've worked with Extant, who's the visually impaired theatre company, as an arts administrator. But this is going to be the first time, well, it is the first time, that I've actually produced a piece of my own work. I had an early research and development performance in September, and I'm about to have a second one in April, which is, it's very, very hard work, and I've been doing it after having my first little one here. But it's really exciting. I've got a director working with me, and I'm working with an associate director at Birmingham Rep, which is really exciting. And we'll be going down to the Brighton Fringe Festival at the end of May to do a week of performances of this. And what's really nice is I'm getting an audio programme together so that before each performance, I can send an audio programme out to everyone so that you can read up on the characters before the show. You can find out a bit about the storyline. It should be really exciting. I'm really looking forward to it.
And what is the name of the play then?
On the Track.
Lucy Hayward, it's a fascinating story, and it's only just begun. Thank you so much for sharing your story with us.
Not to worry. Thank you so much for inviting me to be on RNIB Radio. It's really exciting. Thank you.